Thank you, Jeremy. I apologise in advance. I seem to have developed a bit of a cough, so I shall try and stop coughing throughout this presentation. Okay, as Jeremy said, my name is Mark Tyson. I work in the Strategic Technologies Department at Janet UK, and really it's my job to set the scene for the rest of the day by giving you an introduction to Federated Access Management and the UK Federation. My presentation asks a number of questions that I hope to have answered for you by the end of the session. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end, so if you've got any questions, please ask then. Before I get started, I just want to clarify and make the distinction between a couple of terms that I use throughout the presentation, often abbreviated to AA. I'm talking about authentication and authorization. Authentication is determined with who a user claims they are, whether or not this user is who they say they are. Authorization is looking at what rights that user is allowed once they've logged into a network, for example. What is federated access management? As with any federation, members sign up to a common set of rules and agree to abide by those rules when participating in the federation. In the case of the UK Federation, it's the rules of membership document that's basically all the legal requirements that, that are on members, all members within the federation. excuse me. If you want to find more information about the Federation and how it's comprised and the legal requirements of members, it's a very good document to have a read through. It's only about 12 pages long. It's not as onerous as the title may sound, and it's available online. With traditional methods of authentication authorization, it is usually the responsibility of the service provider to make the decision as to whether or not a user is able to gain access to their resource, their online service. With the federated model, this responsibility is devolved to the user's home organisation, typically their academic institution. I've borrowed these couple of slides from a colleague of mine, as they nicely illustrate, I think, the differences between sort of more traditional legacy access management systems and the federated model. Unfortunately, my laser pointer is not working, but you've got the identity provider over here on the left, which is, as I say, typically an academic institution, the user's school or college. A service provider over on the right, the provider of the online resource, and the browser user sat up there in the top trying to access that resource. And some form of license between the user's home organisation and the service they're trying to access. The service provider, when a user wants to gain access to the resource, needs to know whether or not the user has a license. And traditionally, the user responds by entering a username and password. And in doing so, they are passing their details, their username and password, their personal information to the third-party service provider. The service provider in this case actually knows more than it wants to know and less than it needs. It doesn't really care what this user's username is or what their password is. What it wants to know is whether or not the organisation they're from has got a licence to access their content. And with this model, both the identity provider, the user's home organisation, and the service provider need to maintain a list of all of the users who can gain access to the resources. With the federated model, service provider still asking the same question, still wants to know the same thing. But rather than logging into the service provider, the user logs into their home organisation with the username and password that their home organisation has issued them with. And it is the identity provider, their academic institution, that makes the assertion and claims that, yes, in this case, we do have a licence to access this particular resource, and that assertion is made through the user's browser back to the service provider. The user's personal details are kept between them and the organisation that issued them with those credentials. The service provider finds out what it needs to know, that yes, there's a licence in place, doesn't need to know the user's name. And the service provider isn't required to maintain a database of all the users who have access to their resource. It's now looked after by the user's home organisation, who store this information anyway on behalf of users, so why duplicate the effort? Okay, what is Shibboleth? Shibboleth is an initiative that was developed by the Internet 2 community in the United States, the rough equivalent of Janet UK in North America, to meet the needs for organisations to exchange information about their users in a secure and privacy-preserving manner. Because it was developed by education, by the education community, it's tailor-made to meet our requirements, and that's why we've adopted it in the UK. What's it used for? It allows a browser user to access protected online resources, content, whatever they may be, based on information that's asserted about that user by the home organisation. And it allows providers of online resources to provide a mechanism for access control. So looking at how Shibboleth works in slightly more detail now, you've got your browser user here attempting to access the service. The example I'm using is the Janet video conferencing booking service, a service that has recently been shibbolized. There is an alternative login box using Shibboleth in yellow, just beneath the standard login. So the user will click login down there, and their browser will be automatically redirected to the Federation's WAIF, or Where Are You From service. The WAIF looks like this. It's just a list of, an online list of all of the identity providers that are participating within the Federation. And it allows users to select which organisation they're from, to determine where they're from. In the example I'm using here, the student is from Cardiff University, so they select Cardiff from the list, and then click on Select over on the right-hand side. Their browser is then automatically redirected to their home organisation, the home organisation's web login page, which in the case of Cardiff looks like this. The user logs in using the username and password that has been issued to them by Cardiff University, clicks on login. They briefly see this message displayed within their browser telling them that their Shibboleth authentication request has been processed and their browser is being redirected back to the original service they're trying to access, the video conferencing booking service. And an authentication assertion is passed to the service provider to say that, yes, this person is a current registered user at Cardiff University. Now, in many cases, that may well be sufficient information to provide the user with access to that resource. For example, if there's a site license in place that says anyone from Cardiff University can gain access to the resource, then the user gains access. However, as with the case of many services, the resource provider, the service provider, wants to know more information about that user before it grants access. It wants to know whether or not this user is registered to use the Janet video conferencing booking service. And it does that by submitting an attribute request back to the user's home organisation. The user's home organisation, Cardiff University, then looks up the details for this particular user, and it is aware of the attribute that's required by that service provider to grant the user access to the resource, and it releases the attribute to the service provider, and authorization is granted, and the user gains access to the booking service. Now, that's taken me a while to explain that. In reality, this happens in a matter of seconds, so it's actually quite a quick process. So by using attributes, Shibboleth enables a much finer-grained level of authentication and authorization to take place. It doesn't need to know individual usernames and passwords for users. And in accordance with the Data Protection Act, service providers are only able to ask for the information that's required to provide that user with access to their resource. So rather than requesting username and password, the service provider needs to just know whether or not this user is a member of Cardiff University or whether they're a medical student at Cardiff University. From the user's point of view, I'm just looking now at the benefits of the federated model. There's much less need to disclose your personal information to a third-party service provider. Instead, your personal details are kept between yourself and the organisation that issued you with those credentials. You can gain access to online resources from anywhere where you can get hold of a web browser. There's no restrictions on your physical location. And there's at least one less password to remember because your home organisation is issuing you with these credentials. And so this will be the same password you use to log into your network as the same password you use to access your online resources. And as more and more service providers join the Federation, there's less passwords to remember because you just use that one password to gain access to all of the Federation resources. From the organisation's point of view, from the academic institution, Shibboleth utilizes existing access management technologies, such as web login software, such as CAS and PubCookie, to help authenticate users. It can also be used to protect internal resources as well as external resources, meaning that you can standardize on one system for access support, and you've got less systems to support within your organization, hopefully resulting in a reduction in overheads. It's also easy to comply with regulatory requirements because by using attributes, Shibboleth minimizes the processing and storage of personal information. From a service provider's point of view, the benefits include the fact that there's no longer any need to maintain a list of users who can gain access to your resource. This is now done by the home organization who has that information anyway. Which should hopefully, you know, you haven't got any users now phoning you up saying that they've forgotten their username and password, so hopefully service providers will also see a reduction in support queries. Because by using attributes, you can gain a much finer grain level of authentication authorization. You can grant access to a resource based on which institution this person's from, their role within that institution, and also what they're entitled to do within that role, within that institution. So service providers have got much greater flexibility in determining who can gain access to their resources. And as I've mentioned, by using the correct attributes, it's possible to do away with, or at least avoid, the burden of data protection regulations, because there's no need, providing you use the right attributes, to process or store personal information about users. Okay, I've talked about Federated Access Management and how Shibboleth works. I'm now going to focus the presentation on the UK Federation. Essentially, all it is a set of rules that binds members to make accurate statements about themselves to other members, to keep the systems that they use, the servers that they use to participate within the Federation, and the data stored on those servers up to date, accurate and secure, to use personal data correctly in conjunction with the data protection regulations, and to endeavour to resolve any problems that might occur within the Federation in conjunction with the Federation operator, ourselves, Janet UK, and other Federation members, rather than by legal action. The Federation was launched in November 2006 on behalf of the whole of the education and research sector in the UK, and obviously to any organisation or institution who's providing online services or resources to those sectors. The Federation is jointly funded by Vectra and JISC. It's operationally managed by ourselves, Janet UK, and it's comprised of two key groups. These two groups are responsible for the policy and technical framework. The policy board is made up of representatives from DFES, Vectra, JISC, and ourselves, and it's responsible for the Federation's rules of membership and any changes to them. And a technical advisory group, which is made up of experts from across the community, and again, they're responsible for technical recommendations and requirements, and again, any changes to those documents. The Federation infrastructure is hosted by Janet UK. We provide a resilient discovery service in the form of the WAIF, the Where Are You From service. We host the Federation metadata, the core component of the Federation, the information that describes the UK Federation. We provide a monitoring service to check, among other things, whether or not members of the Federation have downloaded the most recent version of the Federation metadata to make sure they're up to date. A testing environment so that identity providers and service providers can test their installs before they go live in the Federation. And we host the Federation website. It's a fully supported Janet service. There's a team at Janet UK dedicated to answering support queries relating to people joining and participating within the UK Federation. And we also fund expert advice from within the Janet community. We're offering guidance and advice to identity providers and service providers and help get them going and help them participate within the Federation, configuration guides. We're also putting together a series of training courses. There'll be an introductory course and an advanced course that will be available by the end of this year. And if you'd like any more information on those should be appearing on the UK Federation website within the next month or so. And we also host workshops like these to help people understand what the Federation's all about and answer any questions that they may have. So I've talked about the benefits of federated access management. I focus on the benefits of the UK Federation in particular. By taking a joined-up approach across the whole of the education and research sector, it's possible for users from the day they start primary school to the day they finish university to use the same solution, the same access management system throughout their life as a student, which obviously has great benefits from the user's point of view. It also facilitates the sharing of content and the opportunities for collaboration within and across the sectors. There are significant economies of scale for both JISC and BECTA in hosting just one federation as opposed to hosting one or two. The federation is centrally funded, so there's no additional charge to end organisations. That's both for identity providers, the academic institutions and service providers that are taking part. There's no annual subscription fee. And the federation is based on an international standard that's being adopted in a number of countries across the world. I've just listed some of the ones that I'm aware of there. This increases the opportunities for collaboration and content sharing to an international level. And indeed, we've been recently involved in discussions. We're talking to the providers of national federations to determine whether or not we can actually link these federations up and sort of enhance and provide a sort of more of a European or even a global federation so we can share and collaborate with these countries. The federation was launched in November 2006. We've now got over 100 members. But to ensure that the federation continues to enhance and develop, we've put together, in conjunction with JISC and BECTA, a federation development roadmap. And that's really to keep an eye on emerging technologies as well as existing technologies to ensure that we continue to increase the functionality of the federation and to enhance the usability. That document's available online as well from the federation website. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. If you'd like more information, the Federation website's a good place to start. There's a lot of information on there. There are also two dedicated emailing lists for the UK Federation that I encourage you to join if you'd like more information. There's opportunity now to ask some questions. Also, I'm around at lunch, so please feel free to ask me then or at the end of the day. Thanks for listening.